songs. I've always played by my own rules when I'm faced with loss. I push back against the weight of the world, 'cause I can't hide behind this name. What's truly right can never be wrong, so I won't feel any shame.
Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
All right, folks, our next guest is somebody that I just learned about recently, and I'm really excited to talk to him because he's got a new record out, and it's really, in so many respects, it's the sound of America, and it's called Coming Up for Air. And we have with us Mr. Taylor Krupp. How are you, Taylor?
Hey, man, how are you?
All right. So you just got into your hotel room.
I did, like 5 minutes ago. I drove all the way here to talk to you because I didn't want to talk to you in the car.
I appreciate
but I had to
that.
Get to Maine.
Well, I appreciate that. Your timing is impeccable. So.
I tried.
That's great.
If you ever see me live, you'll see that what you just said is not necessarily true. I have a strong case of guitar player syndrome.
Yeah, I actually went and checked out some video. I've seen you, I saw some playing. And yeah, man, you're good. You're a good player.
Well,
so
thank you.
I really dig this record. Like I said, it's got the, it's like, you know, if somebody say, yeah, that sounds like America. That's what it sounds like.
I love that.
It sounds like America.
I've been telling people for years, you know, before I moved to Nashville, you know, if I was doing a solo gig in my hometown, people would go, what kind of music you doing? I would say, I do American music because it's a little rock and roll, it's a little blues, it's a little country. And
right.
What that equates to is not necessarily a genre beyond it just being American music,
yeah,
in my mind.
Yeah, for sure. So you took about, what, it took you about a year or so to write this record?
Yeah, a little over, I suppose. I moved to Nashville in March of 2015.
From California.
From Monterey, California.
Which is beautiful. Monterey's
coastal
beautiful.
Coastal town.
Beautiful.
Yes. Small coastal town in Northern California, Central Coast.
Yeah, I've been there.
Cool, man. Did you play out there or did you visit?
I was visiting and I did have a guitar with me, so we could
cool.
Say yes.
Yes. Was there a specific event? There's so many events.
I was there to just enjoy the...
cool.
Enjoy
yeah.
The place, yeah.
I love going back now because I can enjoy it more going back than when I grew up there.
Yeah,
or I wanted more to be happening. The reason I moved to Nashville was I needed more to happen to have a career in music, you
right.
know, than what Monterey could offer.
Oh yeah.
So I love going back and enjoying it now.
Yeah.
As a visitor.
Yeah, it gives you a deeper appreciation for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
So
exactly.
what was it like growing up there that was the influence or the impetus for the type of music you make now?
Man, that's hard to say. It's not necessarily not necessarily something that Monterey gave to me musically as far as how I got into what I'm into and what I play. My story is basically this. As a young child, we would go to the desert to go camping. And on one of these trips, when I was maybe 7 or 8 years old, we were out camping and I was being a boy and I was exploring the cliffs of this desert campground that we were at in the Mojave Desert, and saw somebody playing a guitar. I can't remember if it was around their campsite or if they were kind of like off in a wash or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember seeing the guitar and being like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And I think that it was a combination of being a boy in the desert, cowboys and Indians kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
being in that spot, and then seeing a guitar, which I equated to a cowboy sitting around a campfire singing cowboy songs. You know, I think all that struck a chord with me for whatever reason at that early age.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, eventually, you know, you get a guitar And then my secession into quote-unquote American music would have been my father getting me an Allman Brothers Greatest Hits 1 year. Because he knew I was into slide guitar. I grew up in the church, so I was listening to a lot of Christian rock. And there's not a whole lot of super great guitar playing Christian rock outside of Phil Keaggy being one of the best that's ever lived.
Yeah, for sure.
I was trying to find something, and I latched on to certain songs would have cool slide parts, and I knew I loved that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, knowing that, bought me an Allman Brothers Greatest Hits, and I fell in love with that. I remember the opening notes of Statesboro Blues knocking me out when I was like 14 or 15 years old, and I was just astounded by the tone and the ferocity of Duane's playing and of Dickey's playing, and I was just so knocked out, and I became obsessed throughout high school. And, you know, discovering that, my dad showing me the Allman Brothers led me down to country, led me down to jazz and to other forms of rock and roll and blues, because the Allman Brothers encompassed all of that, which is why I believe they're one of the great bands of all time.
Well, I totally agree with you. Yeah, and you're right. They did. Yeah, a lot of times people just kind of just say, oh, they're a blues band, but they were way, way, way much more than that. I mean, you know, in memory of Elizabeth Reed, I mean, alone is it just this opus of blues and jazz, and it's just amazing, you know.
Eat a Peach is a phenomenal record from start to finish, because it encompasses every aspect of their thing, from the funk in Stand Back, and to the country and the improvisation in Blue Sky, to the improvisation in jazz in Les Brothers in A Minor, and the songwriting on Ain't Wasting Time No More in Blue Sky. I mean, it has everything
it does
in it, and of course the improvisation in Mountain Jam.
Oh God,
it's truly astounding to listen to. I mean, it's still like when I listen to it as I get older. I'm 26 now, and as I get older, I am now past the point that Duane was when he made those recordings.
Right.
When I was in high school, to me, Duane was 45. He might as well have been 45 or 50.
Right.
You know, especially with how, and now I realize it's because of how mature he was playing. Right.
Oh yeah.
Which I didn't realize at the time how mature he was playing. To me he was an old man, and part of that I'm sure was he had the maturity in his playing, but also in how he approached music and how he approached loving everyone and all this stuff that made him who he was. Now that I'm past the point of him passing away, you know, in my own age, I listen to their music and I'm even more astounded than ever before by how young they were and how masterful they were. Beyond most musicians. And like I said, that's something that was one thing I didn't grasp, you know, at such a young age, was how talented they were for their age and just in general, because to me they were all old guys that were just killing it, you know, because when I'm 14, 25 is so far away,
For sure. I just think that Greg played guitar before Duane.
But then think about how young Greg was, like 20 or 21.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody has ever sang like that.
Unreal.
Since. It's like I said, and then trying to become a singer myself, that's truly astounding, like how good he was.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny. You were talking earlier about the being in the Mojave and you know, on vacation and all that stuff and exploring and everything else. And there's a track off the record that really stood out to me. And I was like, a lot of the music that you have on this record is very visual. When I hear it, I get a lot of pictures.
That's my favorite thing about music, for sure.
So there's this track on there. It's called Even If You're Wrong. I had visions of the desert and long highways. Like here in Texas, you know, we have up on the 10, you know, going towards Big Bend and Marfa and places like that.
Sure.
You know, that's what I saw when I heard that song.
I love that. Yeah. You know, baritone. That was a baritone guitar through that whole thing.
Yeah.
You can't help but pick up a baritone guitar and have it immediately be the desert or contrary waves, you know, like ocean surf music,
or a honky tonk with lots of beer in the floorboards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Out of country or surf music, you know. But depending on how you play it, I mean, I know the baritone guitar and metal.
As well. So, what was the impetus behind that song?
I was really torn up after the election by how people's families were being destroyed.
Yeah.
You you know, by something as silly as two people's beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rights of human beings is not silly. But to me, like, people having a belief in something and then having it affect their Thanksgiving dinner or their Christmas and people not being invited to that, that, like, broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the impetus for writing that song. Was just trying to say something like, you know, you can completely disagree with your uncle or your dad,
mm-hmm.
or your sister or your brother, but that doesn't mean you don't. That doesn't mean that it has to drive a wedge between the love you have for each other, you know, and the respect you have for each other.
Right.
And I saw that happen more. Maybe it's because I'm older, you know, but I saw that happen more with the last election than any other election.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It could be an age thing. You know?
No, I, it's an age thing in the sense that you are aware now.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right that there is a different type of polarization that's taking place right now. But
yeah, man, I mean, it was just insane, and still is.
Yeah.
You know, and I introduced that song on all my shows, is, you know, a song about being kind to each other and having respect for each other. I think that's really important, and it's more important now than ever.
Well, that's good. I mean, that gives me a whole nother look at the song too, in the sense that it's a song to raise awareness too. So that's kind of good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was exactly the goal or the point of the song, was to raise awareness of that particular thing.
That's good.
And,
that's good.
I wrote it really quickly. I picked up the baritone and played that riff that kicks it off.
Uh huh.
And, well, for me, it was quick. And then within 2 days, I kind of had the tune, basically.
Cool.
That's quick.
when you recorded it, you used the baritone. What were you – run us through the rig on that. I'll do that a lot when we talk about these songs.
My rig is basically the same.
Yeah.
For everything. My rig is basically a 66 Pro Reverb.
What's that?
My rig is basically a 1966 Pro Reverb.
Uh-huh.
And then a pedal board that was put together by a company in Nashville called XTS, Exactone Solutions.
And what's in there?
And on the pedal board is Polytune Tuner, RC Booster, into a soul-driven Alan Hynes pedal. Have you talked to Alan Hynes on your show?
You know, he and I, we've chatted, but we haven't gotten him on the show yet.
Because Alan Hynes is one of my favorite players.
Yeah.
He's so musical. I listen to him a lot before gigs to try to aspire to his level of musicality.
Yeah.
So his signature overdrive pedal from Exotic, which is a newer thing they recently put out, you know, into a Exactone Winford drive, which is a ridiculous overdrive pedal. I use it a lot for the super thick, kind of fuzzy Eric Johnson or slide kind of thing, you know, David Lindley slide thing. It really, really excels at that on an unreal level. You know, into a Boss DD500, into a Hall of Fame reverb. And I've since added a Keeley Super Mod station.
Oh, I love the Super Mod, man.
Super Mod, you know, plus, or the purple pedal.
Yeah.
You know, it's just their version of a Strymon thing that isn't going to cost me, you know, my mortgage next month.
By the time this airs, my episode with Robert will have aired. He's a sweetheart.
That'll be super great.
Yeah, you'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy it.
I did check out. You know, I've been listening to your show.
Uh-huh.
I listened to the Carl Verheyen one because I love him. I haven't listened with him once.
He's great. He's great.
He's so incredible. He's one of the most fantastic humans I've ever met.
Yeah.
He's the nicest guy, and the David Grissom one was super great because he's what a player, you know.
Yeah, you know, and I'm so spoiled too, because like every Tuesday night I can see David Grissom for free.
So you live in Austin?
Yeah.
Wow.
I
haven't made it down there yet to play. It's on my list of places to stop.
Oh yeah.
Visit and play.
Yeah. I could see you with the Saxon for sure.
Oh yeah.
Or Cactus Cafe, that would be great.
A lot of guys I dig, you know, like in the current Americana scene. I listen to a lot of those guys a lot. You know, guys like Sam Outlaw.
Yeah.
And people like that. They're playing Cactus Cafe.
Yeah.
A lot on their tours. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, I think that's a great room for you. And you know, the wonderful thing about, you know, like Nashville, I think Austin, and even more so maybe in Austin, there isn't a bad sounding room All the rooms sound
great.
They sound great. It doesn't matter how big or small, they sound great. So,
well, it's helpful when everybody knows something about music and the rooms are all sort of treated to a certain extent.
Yeah, they're tuned. They're just tuned.
Yeah, they're tuned.
Yeah,
exactly.
But
yeah, that track. Even if you're wrong, to get back to that, it was. I have a reverent baritone.
I
believe it's called The Descent.
Uh huh.
And you should get Ken and Joe on, because they would be fantastic on your show if you haven't ever talked to them.
Yeah, I'd love to.
They're always just pushing the boundaries of electric guitar.
Yeah.
I love those guys. I've known them for a couple of years, and they help me out whenever they can. They're a wonderful company. I got to give a shout out to them.
So what is your main electric guitar?
My main electric guitar is also a Reverend. It's a Reverend Pete Anderson signature.
Oh, yeah.
Telly, which their Telly, which is called an East Sider.
Right.
And that's my main electric guitar. I love Pete Anderson. He's probably one of my three favorite guitar players.
He's amazing.
He's amazing, and he's so musical, and his production is out of this world.
Yeah.
His abilities as a producer is just insane.
Yeah.
So I fell in love with him, him and Dwight's thing, at the same time that I really discovered the Allman Brothers. Because as I got into the Allman Brothers and started listening a little more to country music and trying to figure that thing out, I said to myself, well, I don't know how to play this music, and I should learn, you know?
Right.
And I had never been into country at all. Brad, I was 14 or 15, so.
Right.
You know, but as I heard Lynyrd Skynyrd do a cover of Honky Tonk Nighttime Man. Off of their Street Survivors record, and the guitar playing on it really knocked me out. It was Steve Gaines, who was a phenomenal guitar player who unfortunately perished in the plane crash.
Yes.
But he was from Oklahoma, so he was a country picker, and he does the most incredible country picking on their cover of that Merle tune. And that really, you know, made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to learn some more about this thing, because this thing's incredible. And I went to Walmart in Salinas, California, near where I grew up, and I looked for the most country album cover I could find and ended up picking up a Dwight Yoakam Greatest Hits. And I popped that in, you know, and the first thing I heard was, it just knocked me out, these tone and his playing, you know.
Right.
On Please Please Baby, Come Back Home, you know, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I became a huge fan of that thing, of really hardcore, real country music with real lyrics and real musicianship and something to say. I became just a bigger fan of that at the same time as the Allman Brothers thing. And I sort of had I would always go back and forth. I'm like, well, what am I? Am I going to really be like a country band? Am I really going to be like this jam band guy? You know, which of course is dumb now, you know, to think you have to be one or the other, you know. But in high school, I had a hard time kind of focusing on what I wanted to focus my attention on playing wise.
Right.
You know. But I love Dwight for the same reason I love the Allman Brothers. If you listen to the breadth of his catalog, especially when people are producing
God,
and playing with him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dwight is one of those guys. He's not just country. He's not just honky tonk. He's got some rockabilly. He's got,
he's more rock and roll than any rock.
And he's rock and roll.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
He really is.
You know? When he did the Blasters' Long White Cadillac, that was it for me, man.
And the live version of that's ridiculous too, off of his live record.
Yeah.
You know, not only does Pete play fantastic on it, but his singing on it is really cool. He does some different stuff with his voice than what's on the studio, and it just goes on and on and on and on. Yeah. Kind of like the studio one, but longer. It's just on and on.
Yeah, I was just watching on Facebook the other night. Facebook Live was broadcasting. Dwight was broadcasting a show from. Have you ever been to Long Island? Ever been there?
I've never been to Long Island. No.
Okay,
I've been upstate New York. I've played upstate.
There's this crazy place on the east end of Long Island in the Hamptons. There's a town out there called Amagansett, and they've got this tiny little hole in the wall called the Stevens Talk House. And, you know, you go there and, you know, I mean, this is like, you know, you got all these Muffies and Buffies and, you know, these yuppies watching, you know, country music and blues.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I used to live on Long Island. So I would go out, trek out there to see Junior Brown
or to see
the North Mississippi All-Stars you know. But yeah, so Dwight was there the other night, and they broadcasted live from there, and he was just so on. He's just on. He's like a light switch. He's on.
I've seen him 4 or 5 times, you know, and vocally, I don't know that I've ever seen anyone better live, you know.
Yeah.
He always hits every note.
Yeah.
And his confidence is astounding.
Yeah, and it's effortless.
Yeah. Sure. And his thing is totally his thing. You know, there's nothing forced or fake about what he does, which is so refreshing.
For sure.
You know.
So I got to ask you about this title track, man. This song is, I'm assuming this is the single, if there was a single.
Well, if I was on a record label,
right?
It's the record label. If they were playing rock and roll or roots music on the radio.
Yeah. If radio had a clue.
If it was 1968 or 72 or something, yes, that would be the single.
Well, this track.
Actually, Even If You're Wrong. Also, I introduced Even If You're Wrong as the single, quote-unquote, it shows, you know.
Yeah, if I was an A&R guy in in 19, you know, 79, 80 or whatever, I'd be like, okay, here we're going to go with Coming Up For Air is going to be the first track. That's the first one we're going to release. And on its heels, it's going to be Even If You're Wrong. And, you know, then I would have a hard time after that because there's three other tunes that could definitely be the third single in. But let's talk.
After that, it starts getting a little singer-songwritery.
Well, and you know that's good. And we were talking before off mic, saying that we're, you know, I'm looking forward to that time again because it will come back. Everything is cyclical.
Yeah.
Everything is cyclical.
Yes.
There will be the singer-songwriter again, and it's going to be all about that. You know, speaking of which, before we go back to that track, you know, that's something. You know, everybody I know in Nashville. And I was telling you earlier that I had Leroy on before recently, and I've had Guthrie Chapp on and folks like that.
Oh, cool.
And everybody tells me when it comes to Nashville, you know, they want a single. It's still about singles in Nashville, and it's not normally the singer songwriter. They want either or. So.
Totally.
How
in mainstream country music, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, how does that work for you in that? Since you're there, how does that work for you?
Well, it works fantastic for me since I'm not on a record label.
So you're calling your own shots.
No, I mean, I see two worlds in Nashville right now. Two big worlds: mainstream country music, which is still kind of doing what mainstream country music has always done, which is, you know, there's maybe one or two, maybe three great artists who are on the charts and really that really have something to say. And then there's a bunch of other stuff that is music for arenas, you know, music for entertainment, its value. And within that world, yeah, the singles thing, people are promoting singles and they'll put a single out and see what the single does, you know, and see if the single, it sounds just like the last single, will catch on. The same people who bought the last single will buy this single.
Right.
You know, and that's still alive and well, and you know, elbow with your A&R guy, and you know, rub elbows with booking agents and whatever, to try to get a whole thing rolling for a particular artist.
Yeah.
You know, and once you're over the age of 30, especially if you're a female, you're kind of done. You know.
Yeah.
But then on the other side of that. There's the quote unquote like East National Americana scene, Americana Music Association, Jim Lauderdale, and everything that he heads up. And I would consider myself in that camp, you know, and in that camp, you know, records appear to me, anyways, to be king. And people put out records, you know, they don't really put out singles necessarily because their record might get played on NPR or some other sort of Americana root station, you know, an independent station, like some records still king, and all those guys pretty much write all their own songs, and there's so many incredible songwriters in that world.
Mm-hmm.
It's particularly astounding. There's a guy named Aaron Lee Tasjan, who the guy who produced my record, he actually plays drums for him, and Aaron is also somebody you should consider having on your show because he is a ridiculous guitar player. But people know him as a singer-songwriter.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But he's so great, and his guitar playing is really, really good, dude. You should try to look up a live video of him, because he's a really great guitar player.
Cool.
That's kind of what I see. You know, I mean, that's kind of what I see is that there's two different worlds, two different camps, maybe, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And they both kind of stay out of each other's way.
Mm-hmm.
And they both kind of have their own ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the booking agents that are booking for the Americana world that I can see, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's not William Morris and it's not CAA. You know, and so they, there's just kind of like, you know, they each have their own camps of people, their own publicists that are working. You know, some record labels, there's a couple independent record labels that are putting out, you know, roots stuff. But a lot of people are self-releasing, hiring out their own PR.
Yeah. Do you see any,
hiring out?
Do you see any cross-pollination?
Only with like Chris Stapleton.
Uh huh.
You know, because Chris Stapleton is such a force of nature musically.
Yeah.
That there's no way that guy could not just cross over and do anything in any genre, you know?
Yeah, he is pretty amazing.
I heard a demo in Nashville. I've done a lot of work as a sideman in mainstream country music.
Right.
And when I was on a run with somebody, they played me the Chris Stapleton's demo of a Thomas Rhett song. And if you don't know who Thomas Rhett is, Thomas Rhett does really bubblegum pop country music. And one of his singles Chris Stapleton wrote, and Chris sang everything on the demo. Maybe he did more on the demo than I'm aware of, but I know he at least sang all the vocals on the demo. And it was astounding to hear him sing this really poppy track and to hear how great he sang it.
Hmm.
You know, it was akin, I would consider it akin to hearing like a Michael Jackson demo, you know, where Michael Jackson is like singing bass lines and like singing drum parts, you know, and then like layering it all together,
right,
you know?
Right.
Like one of those things, you know, I related to that because all of Chris's harmonies and he was just so great on a demo.
Yeah.
You know, and it was proof that Chris could sit in any genre musically and absolutely crush it.
Super cool.
Yeah.
So going back to that song, Coming Up for Air, which is the title track of the record, such a great it's a great opener for the record, really. I mean, it just kind of just, it's like an open door welcoming you right into the record. It's so great.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, that there's a song, I heard that song the first time, I was like, you think that's a song I'd like to write? Where does that come from for you?
Oh, well, thanks, man. I had that riff in the key of C, actually. The song's in the key of A. You might mm-hmm. appreciate this as a guitar player. It's in the key of C, and I was kind of playing it with triads in the key of C, you know? A position, C triad.
Mm-hmm.
I had studio time booked, you know, to do my record because I had most of the songs ready, you know, but I knew I still needed one or two more. And Coming Up for Air was like the second to the last song I finished for the record because I believed strongly in the riff, you know.
Yeah.
And what I had musically at the time, I believed strongly in, you know, the melody. I had the first verse and the chorus, basically. The first verse is kind of like two verses, you know, now. You know, but I had that first half of the first verse and the chorus, and I had that riff. And I hustled to finish it, and I knew what it would mean to me, you know, and what it means to me, you know, is staying up for what you believe in, being yourself. For me personally, trying to do more of my own music, stepping out of the shadows of playing with other people that are super great, you know, and deserve every success that comes their way,
mm-hmm.
You know. And so for me, that's what the song meant to me, was I want to write this tune about, you know, taking a chance on what if my artistic thing can stick, you know. And I want it to be an anthem, you know, hopefully for everybody else, you know, no matter what it is, you know, artistically or non-artistically, if somebody just wants to marry the love of their life, and that's a whole new road for them. You know, they're gonna take a new job. You know, it's about being yourself.
Yeah.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what that song means to me.
Yeah.
And I put it, and then, you know, C was too high for me to sing, and put it down to A, and then that even opened up the song even more. It's even better. It got a little girthier. You know, and really opened up the tune. To put it down in that key.
It's a feel good song for sure.
And then it became one of my favorite tracks, even though it was kind of something that I was working on. And, you know, and I kind of went in going, man, I hope all this works, you know, lyrically. I hope this is going to work because I don't love rushing through writing at all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want everything to make sense and everything to yeah, be well thought out as much as it can be for somebody who's not as much of a lyricist and more of a guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, and I was really hoping that it came together, but the response to that track has been phenomenal and wonderful. So I think it accomplishes its end goal.
Do you have to do that with songs? Do you have to let them, you know, you start one out and you're getting it going? Do you have to let it simmer?
Yeah, actually, that's kind of how I write. And that's the best way for me to write is to write something and let it sit for maybe just a day. I mean, there's no amount of time, you know, but maybe it'll sit for a day and then you go back and then you go, you know, oh, why did I do that? This phrase totally makes more sense.
Yeah.
And then, or this melody makes a lot more sense, or you'll hear a rhythmic thing and all that makes it flow way better, you know. And most of my stuff sits for a day or two, work on it, sits for a day or two, work on it. You know, the closing track, A Long Way Home, was a germ of an idea that had been there for a year and a half, you know. And that was actually the last tune that I quote unquote wrote for the record. And even then, it was still kind of like, I was like, I don't know, man, like this, I don't know if this is enough to make a tune.
Well, it's funny because I was going to ask you about that song next. I love the slide guitar work on there.
Thank you.
Now, is that a standard tuning?
Yes.
Okay. And that's on the Reverend?
Some of that is on the Reverend. There's a, not on my Tele Reverend, no. Is probably what you were asking.
Yeah.
The slide guitar on that track is on a Robert Cray signature Stratocaster, which is a hardtail Strat.
Okay.
It's the only production model hardtail Strat that Fender makes. I believe you could get a custom shop one, maybe. If you wanted a hardtail. And it's all stock. Everything about that guitar is stock. But it sustains. It's an amazing guitar for slide because the hardtail, it sustains so well.
Right.
It's got a nice, big, girthy tone. My ultimate goal for that guitar is to put in some sort of an open A or open G tuning and do a Lowell George thing because I have recently really fallen in love with Little Feet.
Yeah.
His guitar playing and his ear and his intonation is so ridiculous. Especially because he was an open A, so he's reaching for a lot of notes high up on the neck that you can't get to.
Yeah.
Normally, you know, because he's an open A and then capoing and whatnot. However, I'm too scared to venture into open tunings because then I would have to start thinking about music and when I'm playing. I don't like to think. I like to hopefully just play from my heart.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The thing I've learned about, you know, I was actually playing an open E today, and the thing I've learned over time is that the more you do it, the more it just becomes this other appendage, if you will. It's just this, you know, it's,
I need to just sit down and I need to map out some scales, you know, and map out the notes, you know, and just kind of relearn that, you know, and take a shot at it. I keep my dobro in open G or open E depending upon the day, you know, and I'll mess around with that, checking out with some different stuff.
Yeah. The only issue is you have to bring more guitars with you on the road.
Yeah, you know, and those of us that don't have guitar techs, trying to steer away from that. But yeah, that song, the Reverend baritone is also on that song. Not playing slide, but just doing fills.
So when you mentioned
the Reverend, that's where I went, was to that Reverend. The baritone's on the song.
Okay.
And it really added a lot of depth to that.
Yeah.
But the slide parts are a Fender made in Mexico, Robert Cray Stratocaster.
Right on. So
sounds fantastic.
It does sound great. And it's got that creamy sound. It's really got that.
And on that track, I was specifically going for a Lowell George Rycooter sound.
Yeah.
So that was just the guitar plugged into my Pro Reverb. And I had my RC booster on, but the signal was then compressed, you know, with a California style compressor, like what Lowell used in the studio, you know. And that's what, you know, and that's what I did, was I wanted a giant, hopefully slide clean sound instead of a super gainy Warren Haynes or Jack Pearson kind of slide tone, which is usually what I go for, coming from the Allman Brothers school. But I was really trying to do a different thing, and it really is amazing when you compress a clean guitar signal how great it sounds for slide.
Yeah.
It's so great.
I was wondering, when you write, when you finish a song, you spend some time with the song, like you said, we were talking about letting it simmer, and it's done, you've been with it for a while. Do you ever hear a song that you've either are working on or have finished working on that you say, wow, I could picture so-and-so singing this too, not just me, but so-and-so? Because I can picture someone singing A Long Way Home.
Oh, well, cool. No, I would say that I don't think that at all, because I don't know why anybody else would want to do one of my songs. And that's not me trying to be humble. That's just me. There's so many amazing songwriters in the world that why somebody else would hear one of my songs and go, yeah, I'm going to do that.
You never know.
You could cut a Chris Stapleton song, you know, or a Jason Isbell song. Zach Mountain cut a Jason Isbell song.
Well, you know,
there you go. I mean, that's who you should be cutting.
Yeah. You know who I heard in my head when I heard A Long Way Home? I heard Loretta Lynn.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That's real. That's such a great compliment. I wrote that song sort of in the tradition of Merle Haggard. Merle Haggard has some songs that are just verses and like choruses. You know, like one verse, two choruses, and you're out.
Right.
So that's kind of who I had in my head from the structure of it. You know, and she's obviously from that era, so that totally makes sense to me.
Yeah, that does make sense.
But yeah, I wrote it in a Merle Haggard tradition where let's try to keep this as simple as possible, and just have one statement. And that's your statement, because that's Merle's thing was, this is the song. You know, that's why he's the, you know, like the people's songwriter, you know?
Sure.
Or like Bob Seger's kind of the same way. He's a songwriter for the people, because it's like he just says what's there, and that's what's there. You don't have to go inside of it and go, well, does it mean this or does it mean that? You know?
Right. So you've been a side player for some pretty big names in Nashville, Tanya Tucker being one,
yes.
Kristen Kelly being another. Now, here's two, very different personas and voices. When you do a gig like that, how is the approach different for you?
Those two gigs are completely different games.
Yeah.
Because the people are completely different.
Absolutely.
People. Are you familiar with Kristen? Because she's from Texas.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with her at all?
I am.
Yeah. I played with her in Houston at the Firehouse, I believe it's called. And actually, one of the gigs I did with Tanya was at New Braunfels, which I know is like, an hour from Austin, maybe.
Not far at all.
Yeah. But like with Tanya, you're basically learning the records note for note. And a lot of the solos are parts, you know.
Yeah.
On her stuff, a lot of it was, you know, guitar solo, and then the fiddle's doubling it, and the steel's doubling it, or something.
Right.
You know, so you learn the part and play the part. With a little bit of room for improvisation, there was one or two tunes in her set where you could just stretch out and play.
Mm-hmm.
But with Kristen's gig, she's from Texas and she loves blues, so her gig is like improvisation. A lot of it's improvisation, at least what she wants, or at least what she's told me she wants. I've been playing with her since I moved to Nashville. She was the first bigger gig that I got. I would consider her my first professional gig. I'm very grateful for Adam Fleur, who is Leroy Parnell's rhythm guitar player, actually. Mm-hmm. He is a dear friend of mine and hooked me up with my first ever gig in Nashville, which is Kristen's gig. So I give him a shout out. But Kristen, she wants the band to be the band and play, be a band. So it's a real trip playing with her because her songs are really well written. You know, a lot of her tunes are co-writes with Paul Overstreet. And people of that caliber, so not only her song's amazing, but Kristen's an amazing singer and writer. And she just kind of lets, she wants the band to be a band, you know, so she's never told me, you know, play this note for note, play this note for note, you know, or don't do that. She wants her stage to be a free, expressive stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I love playing with her for that reason. She brings it every night, and she always has a great band. And it's fun, you know, it's really fun to play her songs with her and have the freedom to play off of her musically.
Well, that's cool.
She's a fantastic singer.
Yeah.
I can't speak enough about what a great singer she is.
Yeah, no, she's damn good. Damn good.
Yeah.
So right now you're out on your own doing a solo thing, and then what, further on up the road we're looking at a full band tour, or
mostly my fall tour is coming up. The band shows start September 28th.
Oh, okay.
That starts in Cleveland and goes all the way through the end of October. The last show, I believe, is Kansas City, which oddly enough is where Steve is from now. I'm really excited to get with a band and play. I've done a couple band shows over the summer. But right now I'm on the East Coast, currently in Maine, playing Booth Bay Harbor Fest tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the short acoustic tour. It's like 6 or 7 dates.
Right.
Delaware and Maine and Massachusetts.
Right.
And that's a totally different thing. You have to approach it, you know, from a kind of James Taylor kind of thing. You know, just get up, play your tunes, and you know, people start looking at me funny when I start taking a solo and there's no band. You know, I can hear the band in my head.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, go out and do a trio, do some trio shows and support the record, you know. All those tour dates are over at taylorkrautmusic.com, and I think I have them listed too, which ones are solo and which ones are full band. Hopefully people won't discriminate if it's one or the other, but you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, it's always interesting to get a different take on the music, you know.
Yeah.
Do you?
It's, you know, it's super fun playing with a band though.
Do you find there are certain? Well, do you feel that there are certain venues that you feel like you're more in the pocket with yourself as far as just in your own skin, comfortable in your own skin, or is it whatever?
I'm certainly most comfortable with a band in any venue.
Yeah.
I'm a guitar player first, and I've played guitar longer than I've sang, and I've played guitar longer than I've been a songwriter.
Right.
So to not have a band and to be by myself playing my songs can get pretty scary. And hope this works out. If I screw up, it's only me screwing up. There's not a drummer back there playing to cover it up, you know. Bass player's not going to look at me funny when I miss this chord.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's like playing on a really good boutique amp, you know.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to hide.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when you play 100 Watt 2 Rock and you're like, oh no. I'm most comfortable with the band because I've played with a band longer than I've done.
Yeah.
You know, even like solo work, you know, just a singer, songwriter, acoustic guitar thing. I've played with a band longer than I've done that.
For sure.
And because I'm a guitar player first, I can do my whole thing with a band, you know, which is, you know, part singer, songwriter, part guitar player.
Right.
And hopefully part band leader where I let the band play as well.
Mm-hmm.
And let the drummer do his thing and let the bass player do his thing. So mm-hmm. it's a full musical expression. And I could do that with a band, you know. I like having conversations musically with my band, conversation musically with the audience. I don't like talking to myself. So when I'm playing solo, I'm talking to myself.
Yeah. I gotcha. So do you think we're going to see you here in Austin?
I hopefully will come to Austin in winter of next year, pre-SXSW.
Okay.
You know, I'm saving all the real south, real southern states, you know, Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Texas, and the states that are way far south for the winter.
That's smart.
Getting up north more in the summer and fall. You know,
that's smart.
It's cold, you can't drive.
Smart, yeah. And it's a great way to protect your voice too.
Yeah. But I definitely, I think when I come to Austin, it's not an if. When I come to Austin, I'd like to spend 2 or 3 days there. You know, and maybe hit up David for a guitar lesson and check out some of the music stores.
Hit up David for a guitar lesson. There you go.
You know, and I love doing that. You know. Find a really great local local player and seeing what he can offer.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
What his thing is, you know, and then gleaning a little bit from his thing.
Yeah. Have you heard the the new Milligan Vaughn project album yet?
I have not. I don't think it's out.
It's
to
out.
My knowledge.
It's out.
Is
yeah.
It? Okay.
It's out. Yeah. And David co-produced and wrote some tracks for the record, and it's killer.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out. It's been on my radar. I listened to Tyrone's interview with you, and I was familiar with him through Royal Southern Brotherhood. Bart Walker lived in Nashville.
Right. Yeah, the Brotherhood, man.
Yeah, you know, and I, you know, Devin Allman, you used to play with them.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
So that's been on that's been on my radar, and of course, Mumford's an incredible singer. His work with Eric Johnson.
Yeah,
and Ted Davis.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Untouchable.
Yes.
Locally.
Storyville. Yeah, for sure.
You know.
Well, man, I got to tell you, I really love this record. I'm so glad that Steve turned me on to you and that, you know, now you're in my shuffle.
Oh, well, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
I wish you nothing but luck and success with this, man. It's going to be great.
I appreciate that. I'm really excited to put it out there and see what people think, because I was talking to Steve about this the other day. Like, I feel like the record's out because I've recorded the record early this year. I've had the record done for a couple months now, you know. I feel like the record's out, but the record's not out yet, you know, just because I've been sitting with it for so long and having Steve work on it, you know, and
right.
I'm working on it. I've been touring behind it since June.
Wow.
You know, and so to me, I feel like the record's out, but it's hard to remember that. No, the record doesn't come out until September 15th. And
that's right.
Then it's out, you know.
Right. When this airs, it'll already be out. Oh, and people,
cool.
And people, go to TaylorCropMusic.com. It's a pretty good website, actually.
Thank you.
And Crop is spelled K-R-O-P-P, so just so you know. So it's TaylorCropMusic.com, and you can find out some stuff there. And I'm sure it'll be at iTunes and Amazon and all those other good places that you can download music if you want, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, man, I wish you nothing but luck. Have a great show tonight.
Thank you, sir.
And
I appreciate that. And
when you get to Austin, you have my number. When you get to Austin, give me a holler. And
I'll absolutely holler at you and put you on the guest list one place.
All right, yeah, I'd love to come.
About that.
Love to come and see you and the band play, and maybe we can get some barbecue.
Absolutely. That's
all right.
Fantastic.
Well, thanks again for being on the show. Hold on one second, but we're going to sign off right here.
Cool.
Okay.
Check out Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, and Tumblr, and of course, on guitarradioshow.com.